Today is September 19th, 2007, and we're at Mesa Community College right outside Phoenix, Arizona, for a discussion of healthcare. The spring 2007 Arizona Town Hall called for access to a basic level of healthcare for everyone in the state, a move the Arizona Republic said shifted the debate in a significant way. They say, please join us for an action-focused discussion on the Arizona Town Hall's recommendations for health care reform.
Is this microphone on? Okay.
If I could have your attention for a minute. Welcome to Mesa Community College. I'm Bernie Ronan. I'm the acting president here at Mesa Community College, and I'm delighted that we could be hosting this event today. I'm a participant of the Arizona Town Hall and a member of Arizona Town Hall, and am delighted to be able to, on behalf of the college, to sponsor this event. We live in the shadows of Banner Desert. How's that? Rather large institution across the street from us that's growing, and we're excited about its growth, building a whole new children's hospital, which is great news for citizens and parents in the East Valley, and great news for us in terms of the community college that neighbors Banner. So we're delighted to be able to co-sponsor this event. As you probably know, the community colleges are the largest healthcare trainer in the state of Arizona, mainly through our nursing program, but also through our allied health programs. Healthcare training is a very important priority for us. And therefore, healthcare is a very important priority for us. In addition to the fact that we are all citizens, and therefore we care deeply about healthcare, as an institution, we care very much about healthcare because not only have we a rich tradition of healthcare training at this college, but as you can imagine, with the dramatic growth that's occurring in the East Valley in terms of the growth of new hospitals, Banner, Catholic Healthcare West, Abrazo, IASIS. They're sprouting up all over the place, and so this kind of compounds the challenge for us in terms of meeting the healthcare training needs of this fast-growing industry. So we are intellectually interested in this issue and delighted to convene this group to hear about the results of the town hall that deliberated on this. I also direct the Center for Civic Participation of the Maricopa Colleges, and so a lot of what we have been doing over the last 7 years is convening groups like this and engaging them in this kind of deliberation. So I was very interested when Tara Jackson approached us about sponsoring this event because I think it fits right into that aspect of our mission as community colleges, to be spaces that welcome the public and engage them in deliberating about crucial issues. As I said, I'm also interested now as the acting president of this college in what this issue has to say to us as a college about healthcare training and the role that we can play, we have played and need to play in the future. So thank you all for coming. I apologize for the parking. I don't know how far some of you had to walk to get here. Part of the reason we're a little late getting started is I had trouble finding a parking space. So I apologize we used to have a large lot that we used for these kind of events that was gated, and it was just south of this building, but now we're putting up a beautiful physical science building, so we had to displace that parking. So I apologize for the inconvenience, but I'm delighted to see so many of you. I want to turn it over to Tara Jackson at this point, and she'll lead you through the rest of the program. Again, welcome to MCC.
Thank you, Bernie, and a special thanks also to Banner Health, because normally when we do these programs, which we do after every town hall around the state, we don't make any money off of them, but we do have to cover our costs for food And we are so pleased that we can have this event where we can welcome even more people from the community, and that lunch has been provided and the facilities provided thanks to the partnership of Mesa Community College and Banner Health. And there's one other group, speaking of partnerships, that I should mention who helped bring all this together, which is the East Valley Partnership, who, thanks to Rock Arnett, made sure that all of these three groups could work together to bring you this program. What you will find at the end of this program is that we are not just putting on a program to help inform you about the issues of healthcare in Arizona. We also want to learn from you what you believe needs to happen in healthcare and how we, the people in this room, can work together to make those changes happen. So as you're hearing the three participant speakers and as you're reviewing the brief video from KUAT on the Spring Town Hall, we'd like for you to keep in mind the question of what can we, the people in this room, do to improve healthcare in Arizona. At the end of the, towards the end of the program, you will get an idea of what a town hall discussion is like, a very small idea, because you will be led through this process and you'll have a statement read back to you. Again, that will occur at the end. We have some items that were at your places when you sat down that tell you a little bit more about the Spring Town Hall on healthcare and what the Arizona Town Hall is about itself. I want to make sure. Yeah, the microphone is on. Great. For our other speakers, I was concerned. But let me tell you what these items are. First of all, how many of you have ever been to an Arizona town hall? Just a quick show of hands. Okay, actually, that's a larger percentage in this room than I expected. For those of you that have been, and for those of you that haven't, the Arizona town hall is considered the think tank of Arizona community, business, and governmental leaders. We engage in a lot of programs around the state designed to bring communities together and discuss the critical issues facing those communities in the state. We have two signature events that are 3.5-day meetings, very intense meetings, you might say, that happen twice a year at the Grand Canyon and this past spring in Prescott. Out of those town halls come the recommendations from all of the participants. That's what this book is here. All of the participants at the Spring Town Hall agree to what is in this pamphlet line by line. And if you look at the participants that went to that town hall, you will see that they are a very diverse bunch, representing not only all aspects of healthcare, but community leaders from around the state, people who might be experts on what their community needs but would never call themselves an expert on healthcare. We bring together this diverse group and have these discussions. We have another item that you might find of interest. This is the first time we've been able to have this type of handout. It's a summary piece, Compliments of APF. It highlights the most important facts and the most important recommendations that came out of the town hall. This is more an easy read document than our extensive publications that a lot of policymakers read. We actually have now back from the printer as of yesterday what we call our final report. It contains not only the recommendations from the participants, but a background report prepared by University of Arizona that is a primer on healthcare issues and facts in the state of Arizona. If you're a town hall member, you'll be getting a copy of that in the mail soon. If you are not a town hall member, you can order that from us for $10. Again, that just covers our publication costs. These items and many others can be downloaded from our website. So now what I'd like to do, assuming this technology works for me, like I said, we've had a few issues setting up today, is show you the video that KUAT prepared on the town hall. After that, you will hear for about 5 minutes each from three of the participants of the Spring Town Hall. Okay. This is where I need my, I'm going to try it a different way. I might be able to get it another way.
For more than four decades, the Arizona Town Hall has brought people together to talk about the issues of the day. The twice yearly meetings are pulled after the traditional New England Town Hall.
In day and age, we just, all too seldom, put people together.
At least you'll hear about it.
Face one another and talk back and forth and talk through ideas to see what they have in common. If you get us all together, you learn that in this country and in this state, we have a lot more in common with what we want to do as a community than we have disagreement.
The topic of this town hall was health care and how to make it accessible and affordable.
Are rising at three times the rate of inflation. Wait times to see doctors are getting longer. And premiums are rising at twice the rate of an average worker's paycheck. And these are just the problems you face if you have coverage.
Dr. Len Kirshner, the president of the AARP in Arizona, was one of the town hall participants. He says health care access for everyone is a topic that must be addressed.
We have 1 million uninsured in the state. We have 250,000 kids that are uninsured. We need to find a way to say that everyone in our community should have access to some level of basic health care services that, if need be, be subsidized. We made a decision in 1965 that everyone over 65 would have some level of health care coverage. It's called Medicare. I'm over 65 now, and I'm covered by that program. It's pretty simple eligibility. The reality is we haven't done the same thing for our children and for our working adults. And somewhere along the way, we have to make a similar decision to what we did in July of 1965.
Not everyone attending the Arizona Town Hall here in Prescott are involved directly in the healthcare industry. They're not with insurance companies or doctors' groups or hospitals. Some are from the outside community, like the Payson Unified School District, where 50% of the children don't have health care, and that's an education problem.
Our future is our children, and healthy children are imperative to them. So many of our kids do not get good care anymore. That's assuming that they did it one time.
And she says health care in the schools is a particular concern for her in Payson.
50% of our population is not insured. So many of our children are not covered with insurance. Kid care reaches some of them, but not as many as it could. I'd love to see our schools have health care right on site for each of all of our students to take advantage of right in the middle.
In addition to pointing out problems with the healthcare system, some of the participants were on hand to learn how they could improve their services.
For me, it's certainly a learning experience because you're here with all types of people with different types of experiences. And it isn't just health providers and health experts, but it's consumers and business representatives. And it's very important for us as health providers to listen to community because what we do needs to be a reflection of community needs. I hope that actually we are contributing, but it's also a learning process. And what would I hope that we get out of this is some type of a plan or recommendations to state government, state leaders, that we look at ways in which we can fill some of the gaps and help insurance coverage.
Healthcare is not just an issue for Arizona.
The reality is these are issues that are germane to where America is going in the future. So I feel it was really important for me to be here representing the 830,000 AARP members in Arizona.
No members of the legislature were at the meeting. Organizers say that because in years past, when they were invited, they didn't come due to their ongoing work in the legislative session. So it will be up to participants to lobby state lawmakers for change and to do what they can on a grassroots level to put into action what they learned at the meeting. For KUAT, I'm Christopher Conover.
Thank you for putting up with all the glitches today, whether it's been parking or starting this initial video. But I think you got the most of the video, and that's great. What we're going to do now is you will hear from the three participant speakers in a row. because we want to be conscious of your time. We will save questions for the three participant speakers for the very end of the program if we have time. If we don't have time, please feel free to stick around and direct your questions at them individually. The first person that you are going to hear from is Farrell Quinlan. He is president of In the Arena Public Affairs. He also serves as commissioner of the Arizona State Quarter Commission, director of Drugs Don't Work in Arizona, and is on the advisory board for Arizona School Choice Trust. Next, you will hear from George Pettit, who serves as the town manager for the town of Gilbert, Arizona. And I'll be especially interested to hear from George, as this was his first town hall experience. And last, but certainly not least, January Contreras will give you her thoughts not only on her town hall experience, but she will update you on what the governor's office is doing with respect to health care planning for Arizona. She works as the policy advisor for health at the office of the governor. She also serves on the board of directors for Los Abogados Hispanic Bar Association and for the Arizona Healthy Connection. So first, let's start with Farrell. Farrell?
Thank you very much. I think one of the reasons why I was invited to participate in Arizona town halls because I participated in town halls before. I grew up in Vermont, one of the states that actually uses town halls still, and when I was a very small boy, I used to go with my dad, but that was back in the late 60s and early 70s, so I have no memory of it. To me, Arizona town hall is all about bringing together differing perspectives, and when I was given a chance to participate, I jumped at the opportunity to offer my perspective on healthcare. For a decade, I was a lobbyist and spokesman for the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and all things business in Arizona, including healthcare. My experience in that position put me into close contact with four major players in healthcare drama: providers, mostly hospitals, insurers, government policymakers, and of course, the premium payers, my business members. All these players have honorable and legitimate views concerning what ails the system, and if they fail to offer a comprehensive plan to fix it, they all know what they're against, and they'll tell you about it. As a representative of the premium payers, I became more and more frustrated, along with my members, by the spiraling costs and inability of policymakers in Arizona and Washington to find solutions. Like many of us, I began to look at health care like the weather, something everybody complains about, but no one does anything about. But the perspective of an advocate for business wasn't what drew me to Arizona Town Hall. What really motivated me was my experience last year with colon cancer. Notwithstanding the negative effects of radiation and chemotherapy, and of course the cancer itself, my encounter with our healthcare system had a lot to recommend it. I had an excellent surgeon. Thank you, Doctor. Sorry to get emotional, but
think of that trouble.
Dr. Robert Campbell saved my life. His office is across the street. Banner Desert. Humana Healthcare. Humana did a great job. They were my insurance company. And Dr. Jack Hettelkamp, my ongoing oncologist. It's great to have Humana because my chemotherapy bill alone was about $125,000. But I was lucky. Not just on my clinical outcome. I'm right now at, and people are all in the healthcare field, I can't tell you anything you don't already know, but I'm at about the 19th or 20th month of my first 2 years after my encounter, so everything is good. But not just my clinical outcome was I lucky on. I was lucky on access. All those things were in place for me because of where I worked, and they had an excellent healthcare plan. But in January of this year, I left the Arizona Chamber and opened my own government affairs and public relations shop. I was soon confronted with the fact that I'm effectively uninsurable outside of a group health plan. COBRA was not available to me, only a conversion plan that, get this, had a lifetime benefit maximum of $10,000 lifetime. I could purchase this ridiculous coverage for a premium of $2,000 a month. Needless to say, my little company quickly merged with another firm so I could take advantage of being part of their group. So that's the perspective I bought to the Arizona Town Hall. Call me Mr. Adverse Selection. Do I have an answer to the improving health care in Arizona, which is what we will be asking you later as we do our little role play? Not really, just offer my perspective as somebody who was saved by the system. Whatever we do, let's enhance America's leadership in developing cutting-edge medical technologies and techniques. Pharmaceuticals are a big part of this equation. New medicines are expensive. New cancer drugs are expensive. My chemotherapy treatments have only been the standard of care for my type of cancer for a few years. It costs about a billion dollars to bring a new drug through development, clinical trials, FDA approval, and into our drugstores and hospitals. Let's not harm the proverbial goose that lays the golden eggs. Let's not take the easy way out and dump this problem in the lap of government. More government control over health care is not what we need. Price controls, rigid mandates, and rationing are all contributors to the health care problem, not answers to it. We enjoy great freedom in this country to choose where we live, how we raise our children, how or whether to worship, where we work, how we feed and clothe ourselves. Health care shouldn't be a special case that we turn over to a cold, faceless, inefficient bureaucracy. Instead, let's look for ways to help empower the consumers of health care. Finally, this may sound overwrought, but employer-based health care may be the greatest danger to achieving the American dream. No one should have to factor in how a career change might impact their health care coverage. Why does some middle manager at your job have this enormous power over our lives and the lives of our families? Is that manager's decision predicated on my family's best interests or the interests of the company's bottom line? I want that middle manager to worry about the bottom line. I want the company to make money. Profits are good. Those are his priorities. They're not mine when it comes to health care coverage. Let's figure out an amicable settlement and divorce health care insurance from employment. Thank you.
My name is George Pettit, and as Tara indicated, I was the newbie. This was my first Arizona Town Hall. Some people might ask, what in the world does a city manager have doing sitting in on a discussion about health care in Arizona? I think when I applied for the program, two things were on my mind. The first level, in terms of professionally, was the fact that despite all assurances to the contrary, the frontline delivery mechanism for healthcare is rapidly becoming our emergency medical services responders, the fire department. They are routinely getting called and occupied at individuals' homes on issues of diabetes care, any other number of issues with breathing, heart, you name it. There's, if you were to look at the response logs, it shows that there are regular daily runs that we make to given homes in the community. They're also being tied up by the capacity of the healthcare system to deal with emergency care. Yes, we do have those wonderful accidents that occur at every intersection, so we can't get into the parking lot. But the bigger issue is that the emergency rooms are at a capacity where we can't even take the people that we're transporting that may have that same medical problem at home and get our fire units back into service. That's costing the public money. So that was one perspective that I took to it. Professionally, I took another perspective to it. The town of Gilbert became a self-insured medical program. We could no longer afford the traditional insurance premiums. So we are now our own self-insured trust. And every year, we have to basically pay our own bills until we hit that magic $1 million or $10 million mark in terms of out-of-pocket expenses before we can get into a reinsurer. Long-term, as we grew as a community, right now we're at about 1,100 employees with a population of about 200,000. At build-out, we're going to be a community of 300,000 and probably have closer to 1,500 or 1,600 employees. Those are the current employees. We also have employees who are now thinking about retiring, who have an issue with health care, looking to Gilbert to provide the same benefits that Mesa did historically. That has created financial problems for them in the long term. So as a public manager, health care is going to be an issue that we all have to deal with, because until you can figure out how to deliver municipal services without people, and people require health care, it's going to be an issue for us to look at. So that was another perspective that I brought to it. The third piece was a personal one, because I have been, in fact, dealing with elderly parents, trying to figure out how to get health care for them, trying to understand why a diabetic father who is on Medicare and is eligible for something can't get a $400 cushion paid for because he's not quite as ambulatory as he used to be. He doesn't want to be in a wheelchair. If he was in a wheelchair, he could get that for free. But the fact that he's sitting on a regular chair and still, you know, a little bit ambulatory, he can have that for $400. The number of medications that he's on, in terms of what's going on with him and the lifetime, I don't think anybody, if you were to talk to the greatest generation, anticipated that they were going to be living into their 70s, 80s, or 90s. Some of us in this room are going to very easily live into our 70s, 80s, and 90s because of the advances in healthcare, the same beast that we're talking about in terms of trying to figure out how to manage it financially. It's going to benefit us in the long run, but how are we going to survive that? I'm hoping to live to 70, 80, or 90, because now that I'm 55, suddenly 70, 80, or 90 looks pretty damn close. And so I better start planning for it. I can still remember, you know, the 25th birthday party, and everybody says, you know, quarter of a century, bad, you sound old, and well, suddenly you're half a century old, it's an entirely different perspective. And it goes on from there. So when I'm a century old, I'm not quite sure what my kids are going to do. My daughter is a healthcare professional, and she promised me that she would find a nice palo verde tree out in the desert that I could be left under when the time came. And yes, she is a healthcare professional, so I don't know what kind of training she's getting at the community colleges when it comes to patient care. So that's the perspective I took into it. I think in terms of the process, it is an extremely enlightening process, because the town hall does bring together people with very strong opinions and very strong goals when it comes to being a participant in that town hall. But that activates the discussion so that you can hear the variety of exchanges. Probably the biggest eye-opener for me was the, and I don't want to call it a conflict, but that's still what it looks like to me from an outsider looking in, is the whole issue of medical care versus mental health care. There's a tremendous chasm in there that probably the public doesn't understand. But there is a division of opinion that why mental health care isn't covered the same way as medical health care is one of the ongoing issues. And it's still an ongoing issue, as I said, for us as a public service provider, because of the people we're treating that are self-medicated in-home, that create emergency response situations for our police department and our fire department when they don't stay on their medication, or if they need to be institutionalized, or some other of those issues happen. It affects us all in the public sector. But there's a very strong chasm that came out in this particular discussion that was interesting to watch right up to the end when we're building consensus. It's a very strong sense that you get from that, and I think that's where the education and the value comes to someone such as myself, in terms of really understanding how comprehensive and how complex the issues are that we're talking about. Everybody has a very easy opinion to fix things. But until you can participate in something like the Arizona Town Hall and get all of the information, all of the perspectives, hear the discussion, be a participant in the discussion, ask those questions, and come back with some constructive solutions, you really don't get it. And I'm hoping that some of you in this room who did not raise your hands, if you have the opportunity to participate in the town hall, do so, because it does add value. It changes your perspective, and it definitely educates you and makes you a better citizen for the state of Arizona. So, thank you.
Good afternoon, I'm January. I'm the Governor's Health Policy Advisor, and this is my first year as well participating in the Arizona Town Hall. I have a feeling that I was asked to participate because of my job and the woman that I work for, and it was a really great opportunity to be able to participate in the Town Hall. Probably me, because of my job, am particularly grateful to the work of the Arizona Town Hall, because they went through some of the very same issues that we had been trying to work through over the last several months internally in the governor's office. And when I received the recommendations all, you know, listed out, a lot of them were very similar to the issues and the approaches that we've been talking about. And I was very fortunate to see that, you know, what a very small staff had put together and focused in on behind closed doors was resonated very much so with a room full of a couple of hundred people who were quarantined together for 3 days. What we had been doing with those recommendations was kind of taking them to the next step and figuring out how can we actually implement some of these. When we're figuring out what we can implement, looking at the long range, the planning, what can be done this first year, what can be done in the next couple of years, and what takes more long-term planning. And if you look at the 10 recommendations that are in that the pamphlet with the baby on it, some of them really can start to be implemented now. Many of them are being. That was really part of the good news as well. But some of them will take more time, and so groundwork needs to be started now or the next year or so forth moving forward. The governor has been really intensely and globally looking at healthcare issues since about February in a very global way. Over the last few years, there's been a lot of good work done on building foundation and building our workforce, although we still have a long ways to go. There is hope. I know some people see this report with recommendations and they think, oh, it's a report. But I will give you an example of a few years ago, the Nursing Workforce Shortage Task Force was created. And I don't even typically use the word task force, but this task force came forward with about 10 recommendations. Many of those recommendations were implemented. And over the last 4 years, they have literally doubled the number of registered nurses that are licensed in the state. That's the great news. The bad news is we're the fastest growing state in the country, and doubling our number of registered nurses isn't getting us close enough to where we need to be. But it also shows that when you take people and sit them down to focus on issues, they can come up with recommendations and plans and steps that are meaningful and can really have an impact. So what we've done is the governor has hosted several sessions and discussions with stakeholders in different parts of the state. We've been out in northern Arizona, in western Arizona, in Tucson, in Cochise County, and here in the Metro Phoenix area. And really what we did was sit down people who were very invested in these issues, either because they're healthcare professionals, because they are nonprofit and community-based organizations that work with people, whether they are large employers, small employers, we had some chamber groups, a real diverse group of people who were sitting down. And really what we did was we took these recommendations from the town hall. They were supplemented by some of the other approaches that we had developed in our own office as well, and had seen some of them in other states. And we sat down these individuals with these sheets, literally of just recommendations straight from the town hall and others, and had them discuss these solutions and these steps and these approaches, and talk to us about what made the most sense. How did it impact them in their role in our state? And we received really good feedback. In fact, yesterday we just finished up the summary of that and sent that out. We hope to, that's available if anyone would like to follow up and see what kind of feedback that was. Our job from here now is to go further again with the recommendations that came from the town hall, from our own sessions, and to sit down and look at what can we accomplish over the long term, not just in the short term. Obviously, funding is always going to be an issue. There's a great demand being placed on the federal government to come up with some options. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, it's a politically interesting time for all of us when it comes to healthcare, because healthcare is being talked about a lot by the presidential candidate. So that's what we've been doing, and that's where we're going. We hope to sit down, go through all of this, and have some kind of action steps and plan put together with other individuals and move forward. So the governor has 3.5 years left of her term. There were several legislators who participated in discussions, and we look forward to really sitting down with legislators and talking in a bipartisan way. Healthcare is one of those issues, as you heard from the other two speakers. It really touches people at a very personal level and in many ways. And because of that, there's the hope that this won't be an issue that will be treated with the normal politics, and instead that can be put aside and we really bear down on what some of the solutions can be and to move forward on that. So, thank you.
Thanks to all of the three participant presentations. They really give you an idea of the different viewpoints that come to a town hall. And you've heard a lot about how when you attend a town hall, you become more knowledgeable about the issue, even if you think you're an expert, and you come away as a better citizen for the state of Arizona. But the town hall does more than just bring people together and have them learn about the issue and meet others who can go forward in solving that issue. As an organization, we act as a catalyst for positive change in the community based on those recommendations. We do that in a number of ways. We do it by the publication of the final report that I mentioned earlier, which will be sent out not only to our members, but to elected leaders and policymakers around the state. We do that through our follow-up legislative committee, which takes the key recommendations and moves many of them forward. And if any of you are interested in being a part of that committee, just contact me. I'll make sure that you are a part of it as far as healthcare goes, if that is where your interest lies. So here is the other way that we serve as a catalyst that we're going to do for you now. At these programs, when we engage in this mock town hall discussion that just gives you a flavor for what happens at the town hall, we are not only getting your input, which helps guide our follow-up legislative committee and which we share with others who are trying to move the recommendations forward. These discussions have prompted people in the room right then and there to forge partnerships to make significant changes to healthcare delivery and education in their communities. We are now at the tail end of presenting these programs, so I have been all over southern Arizona. I've been in northern Arizona, of course the Valley. I'll be heading to Kingman next week as the last one of these programs. But I could give you a list, probably 15 items long, of specific items just within the community, not even looking at the broader issue, whatever you may feel about universal health care or universal access, where those folks are going to make a significant difference by moving forward on their own. So with that, what I'm going to do now is turn the microphone over to Sharon Flanagan Hyde. Sharon, there she is. She was the one who found the light switch. Thank you, Sharon. Very important for today. But important for this particular town hall and the Arizona town hall, we're very lucky to have Sharon serve as a part-time development director for us. She came to the town hall as a recorder, which is how I actually started out at the town hall. These are volunteer positions. But she also is president of Flanagan High Solutions, her own consulting firm, and is a professional writer. Her consulting firm she does a lot of work in the healthcare arena, and Sharon was actually a co-editor of the background report that is part of our final report and which will serve as a resource for many folks who are looking to not only gain information about healthcare in Arizona, but move our recommendations forward. So Sharon will come up and act as your panel chair, and I will act as your recorder, and we will get started. Sharon? Thank you. And we're going to go for probably 5 minutes or so, essentially engaging in the kind of process that we would do at a town hall where you address a question. There's one ground rule. I'm going to, in one way or another, gesture to you to call upon you to speak. So please raise your hand if you have something to say. And the question that we're going to address is, what can we, the people in this room, do to improve healthcare in Arizona? Who'd like to get started? Yes.
Well, I'd say, I heard a statistic the other day that 20% of our uninsured, about 200,000, are actually eligible for some sort of a program. They either don't know it or haven't signed up for whatever reason, so perhaps each of us could be a little more cognizant about people we run into that are eligible and helping them to get signed up.
Okay. Yes.
Also, I'm disabled, I'm legally blind. And perhaps, because people like me, I'd like to do more, you know, to help others, you know, because through the ADA, you know, there's certain things that we can do. So if anybody here could help guide me, you know, I could assist and maybe do it with a disability, too.
Others? Yes.
My name is Stella Thor. People are starting to call me Mr. Magoo. I think one of the, and I'll tell you why they call me that in a minute, but I think one of the things that we can all do is get out of our comfort zone a little further and need to become more aware of the alternatives that are on the table. I spent part of yesterday downloading Hillary Clinton's proposal. It's on the PDF format. It's online. It's available. Then in the evening, I spent a half an hour watching her webcast. And she got a good proposal. The reason my friends are calling me Mr. Magoo is because work with the Center for Healthcare Policy Research and Analysis, we've identified five issues that every successful foreign healthcare system has addressed. And those five issues fit the acronym CMCGU. C-M-C-G-U. And if those five issues are addressed, a successful policy or a successful system seems to evolve. First one is, Hillary has this one down. Complementary roles for public and private insurance. So you have to have a role for a public plan, a role for a private plan. And we'd all be surprised when we heard that Ireland had 49% of its population enrolled in private insurance.
And can I ask you to get through those very quickly because we're time limited here, and that's one of my roles is to keep us moving.
All right. Complementary roles for public and private insurance. Mandatory enrollment. The goal is universal enrollment. We can accomplish it with mandatory enrollment or default enrollment. Other meetings have talked about community ratings, guaranteed issue. But those two, those four alone won't do anything unless you have uniform benefits. And I think Hillary's program still has to work on establishing a minimum level of care for everyone and determining what uniform benefits are.
Thank you. Yes.
Probably have to, I was actually at the town hall for healthcare, and I'm hoping to get a feel on the inside of the bigger site document. One thing that we, this town hall, talked about was basic healthcare. And so we talk a lot about universal healthcare, but people start running away with what is that. We didn't define what basic healthcare was, but I think that's where a lot of the debate needs to focus. What is basic? What is encompassed in that term, basic? To me, it's a small step because it's not saying everybody has access to everything, but where can we start to where certain individuals are covered universally and can have access to the potentials of healthcare, whatever that is defined. Keeping it simple, keeping it.
I think we have time for one or two more comments on what we in the room can do. Yes.
Well, I'm wondering, who can we support? I guess the first question is there a legislative agenda that someone has crafted? Who is it, and how can we engage in that legislative agenda supporting these 10 points, okay, one way or another?
And yes, in the back.
I think we can also, as I'm a life healthcare provider and therapist, that within the state, you have many, many different licensing laws and acts and rules and regulations that control and, yes, they're for the public good and public safety, but in many cases, these healthcare licensing laws prohibit advanced training and co-training to provide for chronic care coverage. Talked about the pad for diabetic care in the home. A physical therapist going into the home can't monitor blood glucose if the patient can't do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah.
Those are state law things that can be looked at to provide some coverage in chronic care and advanced practice for different healthcare providers so that they are covering different skills.
Okay. Thank you. This is just a taste of what would go on at a town hall. Obviously, a question of this magnitude we would be talking about for at least another half hour or 45 minutes. While Tara develops a consensus statement, I'll give her a moment to do that. I just want to call your attention to several things on the tables. You'll see blue cards. If you are not a member of Town Hall and are interested in becoming a member or would like to be considered for an invitation to a Town Hall, would like to get on our mailing list, we have an e-newsletter that goes out once a month, please fill out those cards and we'd be very, very happy to have you continue to be involved with us. There's also a trifold brochure that describes opportunities for corporate memberships and sponsorships, which are an important part of the continuation of Town Hall's work. We are not funded through any tax dollars. We are a 501c3 organization, and we are still looking for sponsors for the upcoming Fall Town Hall as well as the Spring Town Hall. This Fall Town Hall, which will be held at the Grand Canyon at the end of October, will address land use challenges and choices for the 21st century. The topic for the Spring 2008 Town Hall is healthcare. I'm sorry, education. We just came off of healthcare. So, you know, there are opportunities there. We'd welcome a call from you to talk about it. And then I also want to mention an event that's taking place tomorrow, and hopefully many of you have heard about it already. Shirley Agnos, who retired this spring after 46 years with Arizona Town Hall, in her honor, the three state universities have started the Shirley Agnos Lecture Series, which will be an annual lecture. The first one will be taking place tomorrow. The event begins at 2 p.m. It will be held at the new College of Medicine in downtown Phoenix, and we'll start with a panel discussion with healthcare experts and elected officials from 2 to 3, and then at 3 p.m., Dr. Ted Shortleff, who is the new dean of the medical college, the University of Arizona College in Phoenix in collaboration with ASU. He will be speaking at 4 o'clock, and then there will be a reception. If space is limited, if you are interested in attending, please call the Town Hall office, and the phone number is on the various materials that that you have. Tara, how are you doing?
I'm almost there.
Okay. Any questions anyone has of me? Yes.
What was the address?
It's at, I believe, 600 East Van Buren is the address of the is the event. But call the Town Hall office to reserve a space and for information. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. If you are interested in attending that program that is tomorrow, which should be a really fabulous program, it is important that we try to have your name on the list. I say that to make sure that you have parking. We in this room all know how important that is, right? And also, U of A, who is hosting this particular event, will have a reception afterwards, and they are just trying to plan for the number of people if they can, but there's no cost. I should mention we have two people who will be active as part of that program in the room today. January Contreras, who was here earlier but I think had to leave. Oh, wait, there she is. You moved. Will be one of the panel participants, and then the moderator will be Jose Cardenas, who has also joined us. So they will be a part of that tomorrow.
Now, for those of you that have been to a town hall, you know that when the recorder is working, writing down your consensus statement, you as a group get an opportunity to say, oh, wait, change that sentence or move this around or wait, I know that was said, but I don't agree with it. And that's how the process works, and that statement gets massaged and changed. We don't get to do that today, of course. Instead, you just get to hear the thoughts and the process by getting a readback of the statement. So here's the statement for you. Many in our uninsured population are eligible for health insurance. We can help reduce this uninsured population by informing them of opportunities for insurance. We can also partner with groups that assist the disabled population to better meet their needs. Becoming more informed about ideas that may seem out of our comfort zone is important to better understand possible solutions. We need to approach solutions by looking at complementary roles for public and private entities, mandatory enrollment with the goal of universal coverage, community rating, guaranteed issue, and uniform benefits. As part of this effort, we need to define what a basic level of health care should be. Finally, we should all support legislation that supports the 10 primary recommendations of the town hall. And we should support regulatory and statutory changes that will help streamline the provision of health care. So there's your statement. Thank you. And now what I would like to do is invite our three participant speakers back up here for any questions of those speakers for those of you that can stick around. So Farrell and George and January, if you would like to come up. And while they're coming up, I'm going to go ahead and see who has a question for them. Okay, we'll start over here and I'll get you next.
I have one question for January on the report that you talked about was coming out. How can we access that?
You can email me. My email address is jconteras at az.gov.
Okay. Another question over here? And then I had a question for the city manager from Gilbert. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
George.
I apologize. How difficult was it for the city to go self-insured? And did you significantly save on the premiums that you pay and your employees pay for their insurance?
We are 3 years into it, so there really isn't a cost savings. We're also noticing that as our workforce ages, that a lot of those early savings that we had when we were all young and healthy, and now we're all starting to look like me, but those costs are going up, and the cost of both the prescription side of it as well as the provider side of it is going up. So since we were basically at a point where we couldn't get affordable insurance based upon the premiums, I think we've had to increase our rates about 10 to 12% per year, which is about less, it's about 3% less than what most health insurance premiums have been going up. But.
And as a follow-up to that, have you looked at the idea of maybe partnering with other cities and towns through like an intergovernmental agreement so that you can increase your pool of public service employees to get lower costs?
We have, but the risk with that, of course, becomes then what does that other pool look like in terms of its health care exposure, what the risk exposure is, and right now we're just looking at trying to manage our own because the employees have that buy-in and that sense of ownership and that sense of responsibility that you sometimes lose when you get into pooling, where you start to share the risks and all of a sudden somebody in Coolidge has a major problem and that's drawing everybody's premiums down. And so we're just trying to manage our own health care costs as the initiative right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's interesting that you asked that. I've been involved with School Employees Benefit Trust, which was established when the state legislature allowed schools to go together and go out and bid for insurance coverage of different kinds of insurance. The School Employees Benefit Trust right now is 5 school districts, which are in the process this year of merging with others that is called Valley Employees Benefit Trust. But anyway, I've been administrative director of this one for a number of years of the five school districts. And it's, in other words, paying the bills and all of that sort of thing, not making the deals. We have a consultant that is from Siegel that has done a very fine job for us. But what it has allowed us to do, in answer to this young lady's question, is the fact that because of numbers, sometimes you think numbers alone will decrease costs. It does not necessarily do that, but it may hold it within the range for schools, for instance, to offer insurance. But it also was one of the things that our first speakers addressed, of even having insurance, and having insurance for dependents, and all of these types of things. And this is where so many people don't take advantage of what we have available. And I read a lot about this, of course, and one of the things that has interested me, for instance, just like if you belong to the Chamber of Commerce, the state of Arizona, your local Chamber of Commerce, they're all involved in being able to offer participation in insurance companies for individual owners, business owners. And this time, and I'm only using that as an illustration, but I think so often we take for granted either yes or no. We either have it because we have a job, or we don't have it because we, you know, we own our own business, so we better not stay in it. And I think that the education of what is available, how to do it, what to do, and get with the system is something that is grossly missing from all levels. And I don't have the perfect answer for it, but it is amazing within the school district, by having mandatory meetings that everybody has to go to and learn what there has to be done and what they do, it's amazing how much more involved they are and knowledgeable and take advantage of the things and know what to do. And for instance, the health savings accounts that have been established and this sort of thing, of learning how to use things that have been made available to us, but we don't take the time even to learn how to use them. And so to be anything that is put together has to have some system of an organizational structure where people can maybe these blue heads, what they have to have. Because I don't see that just saying that we're going to have, everybody's going to have insurance, is going to solve the problem. And I don't think it's realistic to, for instance, to promote a system that everybody's going to have insurance. And if you want to look at a few problems, you might look in Canada, because each province has a different system. And if you think that that sort of thing is perfect, it's not perfect.
Thank you.
Two questions, one for January. I get emails from the mayor's office on just different topics. Do you guys have a normal email blast you guys send out from the governor's office related to health, or just that covers broader topics? And if so, how do we access that?
If there is a broader topic listserv, but I certainly, if you email me, I can get you on that as well. But we are looking by December to have a listserv and a webpage specifically dealing with the healthcare issues and plans, just so that people can, you know what it is that the governor's working on, but also so that we can continue to get the feedback, because the feedback we've gotten from people has really been valuable.
Do you do a lot of lobbying term, correct? Is there any particular plan? I know there's a few out there already. They're already gearing up for the next legislative session. Any of them holding promise from your unique perspective, or are everyone, is everything wanting?
Well, also there are a couple of initiatives that are being developed too. I think there's a link to them in the back of the larger thing. As I said, the devil's in the details, and so, you know, I have to see what they actually come out with, but I think my major focus has been looking at this as it just can't be an educational issue in terms of people not understanding what the system is. I think the system has some real problems and it needs to be addressed, and, you know, I pointed to employer-based as a big problem, but there's... What we're doing now doesn't seem to be working, and I think some new thinking, and that's what the town hall is good at, is bringing people together to perhaps think outside the box.
I have a question for that. I have a couple of comments, and I wanted to address them actually primarily to Carol. I'm Kendra Sable. I'm with the Department of Health Services. January did not ask me to come. I'm the director of our cancer control program, and I had a particular interest because I wanted to just talk about get out of the box and look for collaborating with businesses that are looking at prevention
in their employer group, looking at the shortage of health care providers, looking at prevention and screening and that sort of thing. But Carl, I wanted to tell you that we have been the recipient of a large amount of money from the tobacco tax that we're going to be putting together a very large colorectal cancer screening program for the underinsured and the uninsured. And so that is something that we're trying to do to provide access to care and to address the national issues too. We all should partake in that because there's going to be some national legislation to provide federal dollars for screening and treatment for cervical cancer patients. So,
well, one of the what's important about that is that I was 38 when I was diagnosed, and as you can probably tell, they probably could have found the problem when I was 35, 36 if I had a colonoscopy, but that wasn't part of the normal health insurance program. I would have to be then 50 years old before I even had my first just screening, unless I had some sort of other indication. So there's got to be a way to make some of these things not so rigid and you know, one size fits all. You know, we think that it'd be great to have more screening, but you got to look at what some of the parameters are, and even with more screening, I wouldn't have been caught until I got the symptoms. So flexibility is a good thing.
I think we'll take one more.
Especially in colonoscopy.
I think we'll take one more question. I know you've had your hand up.
Yeah, I did.
I want just one general question, and also I'd like to speak to the lady from the governor's office after this event. The general question is, how many people here have seen Michael Moore's second movie?
Let me add to that topic because a couple of items. I was going to follow up and say, for example, when the new website gets developed that you have, we will link that on our website to our town hall about healthcare. We have a lot of information where we give you links so that you can get more information and more happenings on that subject area if you want to go to our website, which is listed in several of these materials. One of the items right now on that website is a link to an article that the Arizona Republic did, and they took several participants from the town hall and a few others to see the movie Sicko, and then had a question-answer session, a big, very interesting article, I thought, asking them what they felt about what was represented in the movie, and Richard Giorgardi, who set this up, who's an editor for the Arizona Republic, selected people for the article who represent different aspects of the insurance industry. So if you're interested in seeing their response to seeing that movie, and I know how many of you have actually seen the movie now, thanks to your question, but the link is on our website to that article as well. And I'm not sure if I interrupted you. Did you have a follow-up part of your question there? Okay. Well, I just want to thank all of you again for coming to this program. We are always looking for ways to collaborate with other groups so that we can expand civil discourse and knowledge about the critical issues facing Arizona. So please contact us if you have any interest in being a part of that or any interest in a particular town hall. And thanks again for coming today.
You're welcome.